I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Cisco Guevara. He is a storyteller and rafting guide. He's a native northern New Mexican, and he will be speaking tomorrow, Tuesday, the 19th of February at 5:30. It's part of the Amigos Bravos Water Matters lecture series in Santa Fe at the Santa Fe Community Foundation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
So how did you become a storyteller, and what kind of stories do you tell?
Well, I actually got recruited by a group called SOMOS, Society of the Muse of the Southwest.
Yeah.
And they started a storytelling festival some 13 years ago. And they came to me and said, Cisco, come tell stories. And I told them, well, I'm not a storyteller. And they said, we've been on your raft trips. You are a storyteller.
Ah.
So I thought about it, and well, yeah, but it's going to be a little different because on the rafts I have a captive audience with the incredible gorge and the roar of the white water. And when I first went on stage that first time, it was terrifying. It was just as scary as being at the top of the rock garden, one of the biggest rapids on the Rio Grande. And I realized that you take that energy, and on the river you have to get through your fear because you know where you have to put the boat, when and how. And I soon learned that the same thing happens on stage with a story. You have to figure out how to take the story and put it certain places at a certain time with a certain energy. So it was just as challenging and just as rewarding being on stage as making it through the rapids.
Very interesting. Now, I think, I mean, there is a certain gift to being a storyteller because basically what you're doing is taking the same stuff that everybody lived through, but you're the one who's making the narrative out of it and seeing the details of it and bringing it out as a story.
Yeah, the art of the spoken word, it's really an exciting, rewarding, beautiful thing to experience from both sides. I've been really lucky with the SOMOS program there in Taos that every year they bring in these national storytellers, the professional people. There's about 20 of them on a circuit nationwide, and they are required to do workshops. So I've attended every single one of those workshops, and I've learned a lot about the art of storytelling.
What are some of the components of that art? I mean, if without giving away trade secrets, but I imagine it's well-known kind of technique.
Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of different styles and a lot of different personalities that go into this. And the stuff that I really latched onto and worked for me was when I found out, and I was really surprised, that the really good storytellers don't have a planned set. They walk out onto the stage, and they take the energy of the audience, what's happening in their lives, the energy of the day, whatever is influencing them, and the story is within you, and it comes alive on its own. And trusting in that process was a really interesting and difficult thing to hurdle to get over. And it happened for me a couple years ago, and I'm super excited about it. It's tons of fun. You know, it's a challenge, just like the rapids. I know that I've got a really good chance of making it through the rapids right side up. And so when I get out on the stage, I know I've got a really good chance of making it through the story right side up.
It must take a while to get there, though. I mean, it's like any profession that you do. You're an apprentice and you're a journeyman. And you have to go through those stages of having your story and having your set before you can let it go.
Yeah, that's true. There's a saying in the storytelling circle is that you have to have told your stories 100 times before you're allowed to get up on stage and tell it. So one of the things I realized in the 14 years, this is going to be the 14th year this fall, that I need to take every opportunity to tell story and to develop the story, and because the story really does have a life of its own, and the more you feed it by telling it, the stronger it's going to be, the more comfortable you're going to be with it, and the more it'll just reside within you and be able to come alive at a split second without even thinking about it.
Now, are these stories all true?
Yes, that's kind of my shtick, is it's all true stories. So I do a lot of historical stories, especially about the mountain men that lived in Taos, some of the my ancestors, the conquistador conquest and the interactions, stories, true stories of witches in New Mexico. And then the stuff I'm having a lot of success with also is just personal stories from my wild childhood and being on the wild river.
Were you, so you were a river kid from the beginning?
Yeah, pretty much. We would, when people, well, see, how do I put this without getting in trouble? No. when we were teenagers, we would run down to the Rio Grande with inner tubes and a six-pack of beer and jump in the river and try and have some fun. And I remember many times pulling my buddies out of the river, bloody, semi-conscious, near death in the cold spring runoff. And so we would come back the next weekend with bigger inner tubes. Same results. And so we got really smart, and we tied the bigger inner tubes together. Still the same results. So we always flipped, had nasty swims in the cold water, near-death experiences.
And kept doing it.
And kept doing it. Well, you know, young and dumb has its advantages. And so one day they pulled us out of school, called us to the principal's office, me and my buddies who were doing this. And there were the Boy Scout leaders from the local explorer post, who's famous for river running. And they said, "We heard what you guys have been doing. Why don't you wear life jackets?" Like, oh, why didn't we think of that? So they took us under their wing and taught us how to raft, canoe, kayak, and have better, safer habits on the river. And they just took off from there.
So were you actually a Boy Scout?
Yes. Yes, I was.
So you went through all the stages and learned to tie the knots and safety in the woods and all those things.
A lot of the skills that I use out on the river, I learned in the Boy Scouts.
Very interesting. So you have been here and know this land. And I think one of the things as before we went on the air that you were talking about was, which I think is so interesting, is you can live here your whole life, be out in nature. You do this for a living your whole life and still find new places.
Yeah, it's really great. I am so excited about how lucky I am to get to live and make my living in this beautiful land of enchantment, because it really is. There are little canyons and little towns and meadows and peaks and vistas that are just so inspiring and so satisfying when you find them. I can't imagine really living anywhere else, because it's just a constant treasure around every corner.
So you start telling stories, you tell the same story 100 times or more. Does it remain nonfiction? Does it morph? I mean, as you make it into a more exciting story, I mean, you think of the sort of Irish Blarney where each time the story gets a little bit more dramatic.
I'm sure that that's part of the process, but I try and stay true to the facts. I also have learned in my years that, quoting from a very great and wise man, Kurt Vonnegut, there's no such thing as truth.
Yeah.
The only truth is there's no such thing as truth. And I also read some articles about some university studies that show how the human mind functions in two basic ways. There's a logical thought process and an emotional thought process. And the combination of the two is what makes us human beings. Otherwise, we'd, you know, just be robots or total animals. And when you're switching from the logical process and going into the emotional thought process, that your metabolism, the chemical electrical process that happens in your mind, actually changes. Changes the way you think and the way you act. And one of the most interesting things is that the emotional thought process, which interestingly enough is known as flooding when you go into it, will change your memory to protect your position.
Right.
So you can have somebody take a lie detector test and swear that they saw X, Y, and Z, and they would pass it because in their mind it is true.
Yeah.
And somebody who witnessed the same thing, involved in the same thing, completely opposite, and they also would pass a lie detector test because in their mind it's true. Because they went into that emotional process, they flooded, and their brain changed their memory. So when I go back through my stories, especially stories of my wild youth, which often were addled by other substances also, you know, what actually happened, what didn't, but pretty much, you know, at least in my mind, all my stories are true.
Well, and there's also the reality that you can tell, I'm not saying that you're doing fiction, but you can tell stories in fiction whose essence is more true than a documentary or quote-unquote factual account.
Yes, that's true.
Now, does any of this stuff ever get written down? Have you made it to, do you do the printed word at all?
I do not. My wife is a writer, and I've seen the struggles and the rewards that she has. It's a process I'm not real comfortable with. There's a lot of pressure on me to write, and as I'm getting older and slowing down, I can see that, yeah, I probably will do that, but... My active lifestyle doesn't make me comfortable to sit down and be contemplative and take what's going on in my mind and transferring it into a different art form.
What about writing down a recording of your stories, or does that not work?
Haven't tried that yet. It certainly makes sense that that would be a logical step, and I think I will try that. But again, because I've become so excited and energized by the interaction of storyteller to audience and audience to storyteller, and how the story comes alive with that interaction and the story gets inspired and builds from that, trying to capture that and then write it down, it's a different art form.
It is, and there are people who have, for example, said, oh, you should make a set of transcripts of your interviews. It doesn't work that way, because so much of what we are doing when we're live with the voice in person has to do with, in fact, the human voice and with the interaction.
That's so true, yeah.
Now, we're talking to Cisco Guevara, who is going to be speaking tomorrow at 5:30. It's part of the Amigos Bravos Water Matters lecture series. And this is a great series. They're doing so much creative stuff. They're having storytellers and fiction writers and all kinds of people. It's not just kind of policy and science, which is also part of it, and that's good too. But you really know water because of your work.
That's true. I've spent my entire, well, more than my adult life on the Rio Grande and Rio Chama, making my living, getting my kicks. I'm also a parciante on the acequia system. I have three different ditches that I irrigate off of. So agua es vida is very true for me in a lot of different ways. But the main way that I make a living for me and my family is through the rafting, through, you know, selling the rides to the tourists. And I've been doing that. This will be our 41st rafting season coming up, 2013.
When you take people on rafting trips, you take tourists who are from a place they've never been on a river before. What do they have to know before they get on that raft?
Well, they have to know that it is a calculated risk. You know, there is some chance involved here, and that we do everything in our power as professional river rafters to lessen the risk as much as possible, but it's impossible to eliminate all risk. That's why it's fun. It's about 50-50. People have been with us before. We have people that have been going with us for 20, 30 years. They're now bringing their grandkids. And then the other half is, yeah, brand new people, been curious about it for a long time and want to do it. And the great thing about here in New Mexico is we've got a section of river that's perfect for beginners. And then if you need more heavy-duty stuff, we've got a section that's perfect if you need some challenge. We got flat, really scenic, beautiful stuff, which is really great for a section of the market that's really growing by leaps and bounds, which I call the bucket listers. People
right.
In their late 60s to late 70s, they're still semi-mobile and realize, wow, I've always wanted to go raft the Rio Grande. And so they come on our sunset dinner float or our just mellow, scenic. Chama's also good for those folks. And we're seeing a lot more of them show up. And it's so great. It's so rewarding at the end of the trip to see how happy and satisfied they are. The comments we get from them, it's amazing. It's the greatest thing we've ever done.
So they can check that off their list.
Off their list, yes.
Do you have a bucket list?
Yeah, I do, of sorts. I didn't realize I had much of a bucket list, but as my boys get older and I'm getting older, it's like, oh, yeah, I meant to do this with them or that with them.
Ah, interesting.
So one of the things I'm going to accomplish in June, hopefully, is go to Spain and visit the town of Guevara, where my name comes from, and see the ruins of the Castle Guevara and stay in the Palace Guevara with my boys.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll be totally cool.
I'm sure everybody asks you this, but are you related to Che Guevara?
Yes, distantly I am. When you're tracing the Guevara family name, it's difficult because the original name is Ladrón de Guevara. My full name is Francisco Antonio Miguel Niño de Ortiz Ladrón de Guevara.
And ladrón as in ladrón. Thief?
Exactly. So being around New Mexico, you might know some Cedabacas. It's a popular name. It's a good family. The C stands for cabeza,
right.
Head of a cow. So head of a cow, what a weird name that is. Well, it goes back to the same period as Ladrón de Guevara, which is about the 1100 A.D., the Moors controlled Spain, and there were small bands of Spanish men who did certain actions that helped the king of Spain regain control of those areas of Spain. Cabeza de Vaca marked a secret trail that allowed the king of Spain to get his men behind the Moorish forces and defeat them, and he marked it with the head of a cow. And so he was knighted Cabeza de Vaca. Ladrón de Guevara, similar story. My ancestors organized a band of men in the town of Guevara and struck the Moorish forces and defeated them. And so the king knighted him. You stole Guevara back from the Moors and gave it back to me, so you are thief of Guevara. Now, there must be some kind of intrigue there, because why would the king knight my ancestor with a name that was basically unusable? Because most of my ancestors refused to use it. It's really hard to explain that you're thief of Guevara.
Right.
Some of us, like myself, were proud of the name, and it creates a lot of conversation and intrigue. But when you're tracing the family tree, a lot of the people dropped the ladrón part and just became Guevaras. So when you're tracing the family tree. So, yes, I'm related to Guevara in philosophy and probably in blood.
Very interesting. So we're talking to Cisco Guevara. Now, you come from the conquistadors, you come from northern New Mexico, and there is a long oral tradition in northern New Mexico that you are part of as a storyteller.
Yes, that is true. My grandfather, who was a full-blood Zapotec Indian, was typical of what happened when the Spanish first got here. They created a great mixing of the races. Not only with Spanish blood to Native American blood, but other Native Americans from Central and South America. Because, when Coronado came here, he had 125 soldier with him, but he also had 1,200 mercenaries and slaves that were all Central and South American indigenous people that came up here. And so there was a mixing of blood with other Indian races and with the European races. So the mestizo race was born, and that's what I am. I'm a mestizo. I'm one quarter Zapotec and other.
And other.
Yeah.
Other with the capital O. And all of those people had not only their own racial origins, they had their own stories and their own languages, which probably have gotten mixed in ways that are hard to suss out, but they're here in our culture.
Yeah, they certainly are. One of the things I like to point out to my visitors is when you're driving from Santa Fe to Taos, you see these road signs for all these different villages and reservations that basically what it is it's English misspellings of Spanish mispronunciations of unpronounceable Indian words.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, what's the example of that?
Well, Guachupange, Cuyumange, all the
Pohuake,
Nambe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So I have been trying to avoid putting you on the spot to get you to tell a story, but do you have any stories maybe from your rafting trips or from something else that you might like to share with our audience?
Yeah, there's bunches and bunches of stories. Like I told you before, I'd rather have a live person-to-person kind of situation. But for some reason,
I'm not a live person.
Yes, you are. You're a lovely live person. And I don't know why this story jumped out, but, stories have a life of their own. Years ago, I ran my business out of Red River, New Mexico. which is a really interesting town. You know, it's mostly Texans up there. It's a completely different kind of culture. Beautiful area, 8,750 feet. And the tourists from Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana love it up there. And we would get these two guys, Duke and Randy, would come rafting with us every year. And they were truly wild and crazy. Hardworking guys from Austin, Texas. And when they got up to that mountain resort town, they would just cut loose. The first thing they would do every year was put posters all around town saying, Duke and Randy back in town, table dancing every night. And they'd list all the bars they were going to be at. They would show up at 8 o'clock in the morning to go on the Taos Box, the wild section of the Rio Grande, with a 18-pack of beer under their arm, already slamming them down. So it became quite problematic, you know, from a safety point of view. And so I eventually realized that I just had them in their own boat. Sometimes they brought some friends with them, sometimes they didn't. So Duke and Randy always had their own boat. We had to keep them separated from the rest of the clients because they were just yahoos in every meaning of the word. Well, at the same time, I'd been courting a booking agent here in Santa Fe that had the history of making or breaking raft companies. And I knew that if I could get that booking agent to book for me, that I would be financially sound, because that's how strong they are. And sure enough, one morning they call and say, we have some VIP clients. They have to go on the box, you know, the next day. And I was like, oh, my God, the box is pretty much sold out. I could squeeze on a couple more people. But the only seats that are available are in Duke and Randy's boat.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. So I hemmed and hawed. I couldn't say no, and I couldn't put them in. So what do I do? What do I do? Okay, I'll take my chances. Yes, they can go. So the VIP clients show up, and it's the owner of the Continental Inns and his wife. And I put them in the boat with Duke and Randy. So it's just the five of us. And Duke and Randy are wild and crazy, and the owner of the Continental Inn is a little disturbed, but you know, things are going okay. And back in those days, we ran bucket boats, where any water that came into the boat, you had to take a plastic bucket and dip it out. And so every client had to take a turn doing that. It was real important because the boat would get too heavy and you wouldn't be able to control it after a while. And so Duke and Randy were getting a little rambunctious, and they actually bumped into Mrs. Continental Inns. And Mr. Continental Inn went ballistic on these guys. You can't treat her like that. She's a lady. He kept saying that over. You can't treat her like that. She's a lady. Yelling at these guys, really mad at them. So it was this tense situation intermixed with the excitement of running the rapids. It was a very strange day. And so it was the owner of Continental Inn's turn to get that 5-gallon plastic bucket and bail. And he wasn't going fast enough, so I yelled, faster, faster! And the roar of the whitewater was getting louder and louder, adding to excitement, and he was realizing, oh, it was an important job. And so he started going faster, and as he did, he lost control of the bucket full of water and slammed his wife right in the face and knocked her out cold.
Oh, my goodness.
And Duke and Randy took that opportunity, and they just jumped up and got all over this guy. You can't treat her like that! She's a lady! They kept saying over and over again. It was totally hilarious. Well, the trip went fine. She recovered with just slight bruising and bleeding. And later on that evening, I got a call from Duke and Randy. And they were at the airport going back home. I said, Cisco, you'll never guess what happened. Here in the airport, we ran into Mr. Continental, and we thought he would avoid us, but he ran across the airport lobby to come greet us and to thank us for opening his eyes to what a jerk he was, and to thank us personally because he had such a good time and he's changed his whole demeanor and the way he thinks about having fun and respect and all that. He was a changed man.
All right. Wow, the things that happen in New Mexico.
Yes, definitely.
Cisco Guevara is a storyteller and rafting guide. He is a native northern New Mexican who has a great deal to tell us about the place that we live. He will be speaking tomorrow at 5:30, Tuesday the 19th of February, at the Santa Fe Community Foundation. It's part of the Amigos Bravos Water Matters Lecture Series. And the Community Foundation is on Old Santa Fe Trail, or right off of Old Santa Fe Trail, near Acequia Madre. And it's on the corner of Paseo de Peralta and Helena Street. For more information, you can call 575-758-7000. 3874. Cisco, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's been my pleasure to be here.
I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Ben Swan. He is back with us. He's from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. And Laura Bonner. She is Program Director with Animal Protection Voters New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Thank you for inviting us. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
It's a pleasure to have you both, and it's really important because here we are during the legislature, during the 60-day session. We've been talking about all kinds of different things with different people. Linda Siegel is with us every Friday doing the legislative update. And we are here today to talk about, yes, ladies and gentlemen, you guessed it, animals. There are some bills before the legislature this session that have to do with things like animal cruelty. What's going on?
That's right. So there are many bills related to animals up at the legislature. But, you know, one of the really important things is strengthening our state's animal cruelty laws. And you might know this already, but our state didn't have any felony animal cruelty laws prior to 1999.
Amazing.
So it's true. And so even the very worst things that happen to an animal, like someone intentionally setting a dog on fire, which happened in our state, were not treated as a serious crime. And all of that changed in 1999 when the legislature passed the felony animal cruelty law. And since then, there hasn't been a lot of updates to that law. And now we have, 14 years of cases to look back on and see how well or how poorly that law is looking.
How does it look?
Well, you know, when it was first passed, it was probably one of the more progressive laws across the whole country. But now, there was just recently a ranking of New Mexico's animal cruelty laws in comparison with the rest of the countries, and we're at the bottom of the list. So I think we were ranked as one of the best states to be an animal abuser.
One of the top five, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because we're also one of the states that has the most animals per capita in the nation.
Is that right?
Like number two.
That's right.
Now, domestic animals.
Companion animals, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what are we trying to do now to deal with that problem? I mean, have people been prosecuted and brought to court for animal cruelty?
That's right, certainly. But we do see a pattern with the way that the statute is being used across the state, and it's not consistently used across the state. And so especially in cases of extreme neglect, when someone starves a horse to death, when someone leaves a dog on the end of a chain to starve to death, those cases are not consistently being taken seriously by law enforcement.
Oh, goodness.
And we also have some examples of things that were excluded from the law in 1999 that we know now are a problem. You know, captive reptiles. We've had cases of someone breaking into a home of someone who had a collection of captive reptiles that they had rescued, actually, and these juveniles who broke into the home hacked these animals to death.
That's crazy.
And they could not be charged because of the way that the current statute is written. So just so you know, the animal cruelty laws that are being brought forward this year by Senator Richard Martinez from Española and Representative Carl Trujillo from Santa Fe look at the whole picture of what the problems are, and this is the third long session that these bills have been brought forward to strengthen our animal cruelty laws, and it's really time to pass these because we've over the past three long sessions, so the past 6 years, really been getting a lot of input from all the different communities that have animals and use animals, and we've been able to work on this language so that it's trying to get everybody's buy-in. So it is a tight time frame, that 60-day window to pass stronger laws.
Yeah.
But there's so much momentum right now, and we just really hope that the bill numbers are Senate Bill 83 for Senator Martinez's Stronger Animal Cruelty Law and House Bill 224 for Representative Trujillo's Stronger Animal Cruelty Law. And it's really time to see those move forward in the legislature. Certainly that's what the public wants to see.
Now, what do they actually say?
So making things like extreme neglect, when it leads to the great bodily harm or death of an animal, that would become a serious crime. right now it's not clear in the law that that's a serious crime or a fourth degree felony. And also cleaning up things like I mentioned, the reptiles have been totally excluded. So bringing more animals into protection under the statute.
Okay.
Another really important thing is, I'm sure you're very familiar with the link between animal cruelty and domestic violence and violence in our communities. So the bills would also require psychological counseling for adults who commit extreme animal cruelty to start to break that cycle of violence before it escalates, and really help address these issues in our community. Just so you know, currently when juveniles commit animal cruelty, they are mandated to receive some counseling. We know that it's important for adults who commit that extreme animal cruelty to receive that same sort of counseling, so that, again, not just trying to throw people in jail, but trying to really interrupt that cycle of violence and make our community safer and better places to live.
Does that kind of counseling work?
There is a peer-reviewed counseling that over 100 therapists in our state have been trained in. It's called Anacare, and it is reviewed to be effective. And there's a special program for juveniles and a special program for adults. And so we have, we've actually been in partnership with agencies around the state, social workers around the state, doing this training, along with groups outside the state, Animals and Society Institute, coming in and providing this training to New Mexicans so that we can really look at these problems. Of course, we all care about animals, but we also care about our children and our families and the health of our communities. And we want to see these awful, destructive patterns interrupted and kind of teach, instead of the violence, the compassion and the kindness that really benefits us all.
Right, and especially if you throw a light on something, it really helps people understand. Like as you said before, we didn't even have these laws in the past. And then people just ignored these things that were happening to animals and also the abuse that happened because of not stopping this cycle. So just being able to put some attention on it is really helpful, I think.
We're talking to Laura Bonner of Animal Protection Voters New Mexico and Ben Swan of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. There are things that can be solved legislatively and other things that can't, and that just require ongoing education, and this is what you guys are involved with, of course, at the animal shelter. And then there are some cases that might be in between, and I mean, I think there are some things that probably shouldn't be felonies but really should be misdemeanors, like I heard the other day of a friend who saw a short-haired dog on the end of a chain in the snow all day long, and, you know, probably shouldn't give somebody felony violation for that. The dog had food, but the dog shouldn't be on a chain in the snow all day long. It's a short-haired dog. Poor thing. It's cold and mm-hmm. unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just takes a conversation with that person to make them realize. I know a woman I just spoke with just recently, she got involved with her neighbor's dog who was left outside a lot. And it turns out that when she had a conversation with them, that it turns out that they, you know, worked all day and they didn't realize the dog was sort of barking and causing trouble. And so they actually came to an agreement where she would go over and walk the dog, give the dog food, and help them out. And they built him a great shelter so he could be more protected. And I think that's a good way of showing that if you get involved with somebody, you see something doing something that you're not quite sure of, get the facts, get behind them, learn about them, and educate and help them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But we also have such widely varying traditions in this state, and some people really don't think of dogs as sentient beings, and mm-hmm. others think of them as practically their biological children, mm-hmm. and that's hard stuff to legislate when you mm-hmm. have these different cultures.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, I do think increasingly there's this recognition across the state of the importance of caring for animals and the importance of taking care of our community as a whole. I mean, certainly when the legislature passed the felony animal cruelty law in 1999, that was a big change. And again, with the connections between this issue and other types of violence in our community, you know, one of the programs, when I'm not working for Animal Protection Voters, I work for Animal Protection of New Mexico. We work with domestic violence victims to care for their animals while they're leaving a violent home. You know, we've had cases involving chickens, goats, horses, cats, dogs, where an abuser will harm the animals in order to torment the
spouse or the person.
Exactly. And
it's true that a lot of people won't leave that relationship because they're worried about the animal. And so we also offer some refuge to those people who have animals and they just want to get out of an abusive relationship. We'll take them on for a while.
Amazing.
So they can help them out.
And there's a lot of statistics about, you know, when someone abuses an animal, that they're much more likely to be involved in other violent crimes and other forms of abuse. It's sort of, you know, it's a big red flag.
Yeah.
And so it's important for us to, we're not talking about charging everyone with felonies, but it's important for us as a community to take these issues seriously, to not continue to tolerate the abuse, the real extreme cruelty that we see, because it's a dangerous situation.
What are some of the other bills that are up for consideration at the legislature this session?
Well, there's a great bill that Senator Munoz is bringing, Senate Bill 274, to create a tax checkoff to help fund our state's licensed horse rescues. And that is so important. You might know that we have a handful of licensed horse rescues in New Mexico. Their entire capacity for holding horses is something around 250 or 300 horses.
Total horses.
For the entire state.
Oh, my goodness.
And
like all those BLM horses that we hear about, that kind of thing?
Will people abandon the horses in private or public land, and somebody finds them, and they're starving. Mm-hmm. And we have a great horse shelter here in Cerrillos, as you know, the horse shelter is
yes.
a wonderful
yes.
place. But they have limited, they have great property out there, large space, but they just have the funds to do for, I don't know, about 30 or 40 horses right now.
Yeah, and but unfortunately, these horse shelters don't receive any funds from city or county governments or law enforcement agencies that are seizing these horses and bringing them to the horse shelters. So we need to start looking at what can we do to create a better safety net for our state's horses. So this bill would just simply create a tax checkoff on your personal income tax form for New Mexico, where you could designate a portion of your refund, go to the licensed horse shelters in New Mexico, just start to build that safety net for horses so that we're looking out for these horses who do so much for us.
So another one that's really interesting that a lot of people are interested in nowadays is the animal killing contest.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about that a little bit, Laura?
Yeah, that's really a big deal.
Yeah, so that is House Bill 316 brought by Representative Nate Cody down from Doñana County. Many people might have heard about these animal killing contests last November when there's a lot of publicity around coyote killing contests. And just killing for the sake of killing, racking up a body count, and then giving away prizes for killing the mass slaughter of coyotes. And, of course, we know that that is not good for the coyotes. It's also not good in terms of the balance of our lands. You know, you might have a situation where then you have an overpopulation of the smaller animals that coyotes eat, right?
Exactly. And I remember reading a story in the Dust Bowl era when they had these contests where they killed a bunch of coyotes, and then all of a sudden they had these thousands of jackrabbits that just destroyed their land.
Yeah, exactly.
And it also actually makes the other coyotes breed more, so then you end up with more coyotes. It's just such a terrible mess. And once again, it's about the messages that we're sending to our children about violence and that killing for entertainment, that killing is fun, that it's fun to rack up a pile of bodies and give away prizes for that. That's not behavior that we want our state to be known for. When these contests were being heavily promoted last year, we had national and even international negative attention on New Mexico. And so this bill would simply ban making it into a contest or a game to kill.
Right. So it wouldn't ban the killing of coyotes if people wanted to do it individually.
That's right.
That would be nice too, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if people need to protect their personal property or their land, I think there's lots of ways to do that. This bill would not interfere with that whatsoever. It would just ban the contest nature of these things. And I think it's a really important measure and one that a lot of people are excited about.
So every year we hear about breed-specific legislation, and this year is no exception. First of all, what is that?
So breed-specific legislation is the practice of passing a law where you say a certain type of dog, let's use pit bulls as an example. Let's use poodles as an example, Ben says. That's a great idea. So where you say, you know, you cannot own poodles in this city. You cannot own poodles without obtaining a whole bunch of special insurance for your poodle. You cannot own poodles without having a muzzle on your poodle and having a super high fence. And that's the type of legislation that is, frankly, totally ineffective and discriminatory, and that is not does not help to make our community safer. I think we do have an issue in terms of dog bites and overpopulation of dogs in our state that we need to address.
But we do have dangerous dog. We do have legislation that or laws that can stop dangerous dogs from or dangerous animals from being around. I mean, there's nothing that stops the police officer from saying your dog is dangerous or your cat is dangerous and needs to be put away for a while.
I have to say, in my own personal experience, all three of my little 17-pound dogs have been attacked. One by a chow mix, one by a terrier, and one by a pit bull.
Yeah.
And if you started banning dogs, you'd have to ban them all.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. So that's right. And so there's a great bill out there, House Bill 63, that Representative Yvette Harrell has brought with the support of some awesome grassroots activists from all over New Mexico. And this would get rid of the practice of breed-specific legislation across the whole state. And it's a really exciting idea, something that I think 12 other states in our country have already done. And sometimes there's a knee-jerk reaction when we have a really tragic incident like a dog bite or, you know, children or elderly people being killed by dogs in our state. But there's a knee-jerk reaction to ban a certain breed of dog. We know that is totally ineffective and gives the community sort of a false sense of security. Really, we need to be addressing the root causes of dog bites, neglect, abandonment.
Lack of socialization.
That's right. Like that. So this passage of House Bill 63 would just mean that we get rid of the practice of breed-specific legislation across New Mexico, which would be a great thing for dogs and for families.
So it doesn't keep rearing its ugly head year after year.
Yeah, and it's I think it's scary for families, too, who have these animals, who have animals that might be potentially targeted by breed-specific legislation. So I think it's a really exciting measure and something that has been so wonderful to see so many members of the community get behind.
Very interesting, especially the owners of some of these wonderful dogs that do tend to get targeted.
Right.
Well, if you go back through the history, it changes breeds through every decade. It seems to be a new breed, like Rottweilers or German Shepherds. Or I read recently that even in Canada, they thought Siberian Huskies, they were the killer hound because of whatever happened.
So
the idea of targeting a breed is racist, really, in a lot of ways, because you lose sight of what the issue is, the main issue, which is lack of socialization, abandonment, neglect, and things like that.
It would be interesting to correlate the attitudes of the people who are in favor of breed-specific legislation and their racial attitudes.
Well, let's not go there.
Okay, let's not. Moving on. What about trapping? Is that being considered?
Good point.
Yeah, so this is an issue that, again, I think there's been years of public outcry about this issue, the use of steel jaw traps and snares and poisons in New Mexico. And right now, there's not a lot of regulation on these devices, these sort of archaic
leg traps.
Steel jaw traps.
Medieval, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great word for them. So there's been numerous cases of people who are out hiking on public lands with their dogs, and their dogs get caught in a trap, or they themselves get caught in a trap. And so this legislation is being brought by Representative Bobby Gonzalez from Taos. It's House Bill 579, called the Wildlife Protection and Public Safety Act, and it would get rid of the use of these really archaic devices. We've come a long way since the 1800s, right? On a lot of other issues. So there's a lot more intelligent ways to manage our lands, and with being able to use these awful devices that are hidden, you know, you won't know about them until you come upon them. I know in Representative Gonzalez's district, he's had multiple cases of constituents being injured and their pets being injured in these traps. And it's just horrific, and something that other Western states have gotten rid of, and something that New Mexico can really step forward on. So I know there's been a lot of movement within this community to get rid of these devices, and I hope everybody can come out and support Representative Gonzalez's House Bill 579.
Now, if people want more information on all of that, they can go to Animal Protection Voters New Mexico, which is apvnm.org, or you can Google any combination of those words, and you will find it. And then people can write letters and make calls and all of that to their legislators.
Yes.
Right, and getting involved in the legislative process is a somewhat daunting task, but it's really important that everybody has a chance to get their voice heard. I recently read a statement last week in support of the toughening the anti-cruelty laws, and it was a little bit intimidating, but you know, the thing that I liked about it is that I thought my voice was heard. Mm-hmm. The committee members appreciated me taking the time to go to the legislature, mm-hmm. to go to the roundhouse and waiting in line and saying what I believed in. And I think that's we'd love everybody to do that.
Right. And this is democracy such as it is in America, mm-hmm. so much run by money on a national level, but on a local and state level, you actually can get good things done to a greater extent than perhaps in other larger forums. And so showing up and calling and emailing actually makes a difference.
It absolutely does. I know so many people devote their passion, their time, their energy to taking care of animals, whether it's the animals that are in your home or you might rescue animals or support animal shelters, different events. And this, the legislative process is another tool we can use to really significantly impact the lives of so many animals across our state. And you're right, it is about kind of taking some ownership of our democratic process. I can tell you from being up there every day, it is very challenging and difficult. But we all have to be in this for the long haul, right? Because we care about our communities, we care about our animals, we care about the places that we live, and we need to take that active role in influencing these decisions that our lawmakers make.
You know, our lawmakers are just really awesome people. They really do love to hear what people have to say, and they're very approachable.
Yep,
if you go there,
you know, I wouldn't citizen call lawmakers.
Exactly, that's
right.
What they are.
So we've got just a moment left, but you've got some events coming up, and you've got some animals up for adoption.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. We have some great events coming up, and this weekend is I don't know, it's an animal weekend, really. We have a national pet adoption event at PetSmart on Friday, and on Saturday we have actually a Subaru Love a Pet adoption event, which is going to be at the auto park, the Subaru auto park.
Awesome.
Yeah, and that's going to be from 11 to 4 on Saturday. And we'll just have a lot of great animals there, and we'll be promoting it through live broadcasts on different radio stations, thanks to Subaru and ASPCA. And then the next day, on Sunday, my mother's birthday, we have the Zumbathon for animals.
Good heavens.
You can you can dance for the animals. And that's going to be from 2 to 4 on Sunday at Healthy People in the Santa Fe Place Mall.
That
and
is
I've never
so
Zumba'd
cool.
before, but I plan to because I thought
fun.
It would kind of be fun.
Zumba.
Yeah. So, you know, we all have a little bit of Latin in us, and we are just like to get out and shake our bodies. And then we also have a couple animals that are really awesome that I wanted to point out today. Sebastian is a really beautiful
gray and
kitty
white,
cat.
Beautiful cat who's 8 years old and very beautiful and sweet looking.
Loves other cats.
And then Buddy is a Labrador Retriever Kelpie mix who looks like he is very intelligent.
He's a sweet guy. His name was Brad before, and we still call him Brad, but he's a great dog. And so I just urge everyone to come out and take a look at our animals that we have available for adoption.
And there is an Animal Lobby yes. Day. When is that?
That is coming up February 25th, Monday, February 25th, up at the State Capitol from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
So you adopt your pet on Saturday, you go to Zumba on Sunday, and on Monday... Or
yeah, you go to
you
Animal
go to
Lobby Day. Yeah.
So that's a week from today.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, okay. So thank you both so much for being here. Ben Swan from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, Laura Bonner from Animal Protection Voters New Mexico, APVNM.org. And we will see you at all these events. And again, thanks for being on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you so much.